Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I only need 11,000 votes. Fellas, I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break.
That's President Trump in a recording obtained by the Washington Post. Trump again insisting he won Georgia and says he wants to find the votes that proves he did. That call with Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and his legal staff tonight at the Reporters Roundtable. We are examining that call and some of the other issues for a critical political week in America, a Georgia U.S. Senate runoff election that will determine political power in the Senate, as well as the certification of the Electoral College. Well, my guests are Dr. Ravi Perry, chair of the Political Science Department here at Howard University, and Mary Curtis, reporter with the Roll Call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Perry, Mary, thanks for joining me. Happy New Year to both of you.
Happy New Year to you.
Okay. Dr. Perry, can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa.
Too. All of that. All of that. And this is going to be a really interesting political week. It has already started with this phone call that was released by the Washington Post of the Georgia Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and the president. Fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. Let me start with you, Mary. What is the latest that you are hearing about possible reaction on Capitol Hill or from the White House?
Well, you know, the president was actually tweeting against Raffensperger as though the president, I mean, thinks he has done nothing wrong. You hear some people, some legislators calling four charges, if that's possible, because he was pretty much begging, pleading, threatening. It was very undemocratic. You see among Republicans a real split, with some folks like Senator Ted Cruz continuing to support him even with this outrageous phone call in which he's trying to overturn the will of Georgia voters. And let's be clear, he attacked Stacey Abrams by name, and also the county where Atlanta is. So we know the kind of votes he wants to overturn. And others, like Mitt Romney, being very disagreeing with this, saying it is terrible, and even Liz Cheney, the representative in the House, the Republican from Wyoming, having a very long memo saying that this is not good. And it's interesting because usually Mitch McConnell is really in control of his Senate. He's the Senate Majority Leader. But and he has told the Republicans that he did not want them to challenge this, to challenge Biden's Electoral College win, but so many are. And it's just so disheartening because you see these folks who are supporting the president after this phone call, and they know better, and they know that the result is not going to change. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it for power, their own. They're looking for their political futures and counting on Trump voters to say, go ahead. But I think we cannot overemphasize how anti-democratic this call was, mm-hmm. where he basically wants to overturn the... It's an assault on democracy itself, and it's laid bare for all to see. But I really think President Trump had it when he said, I could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and I would not lose my supporters, because we see him, you know, shooting a hole in democracy, and many people are saying, oh, I'm okay with that.
It is truly fascinating, because when I, you know, heard about this yesterday, I had no idea of the actual gravity of this, Dr. Perry. I mean, it was really fascinating to me. I want to play a little bit more and kind of have you react to what we heard.
I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
We believe that we do have an accurate election.
No, I know you don't. No, you don't. You don't have. Not even close. You're off by hundreds of thousands of votes.
Your thoughts about those two sound bites, Dr. Perry?
Well, to be honest, it's more the same for the Trump presidency. You know, remember that we're only shocked or fascinated, as you may say, surprised, because we don't get every recording of the Trump administration. But to be clear, the ones that we have gotten, the leaked audios, the leaked emails, the deleted tweets on Twitter, all of those things indicate the same type of a person that many people were afraid to have been elected president to begin with in 2016. And so really, in many ways, it certainly is fascinating from the standpoint that this president has, you know, days left in office and is still using all the power, all the bully pulpit power that he has to not just, as Mary said, you know, put a nail in the coffin of democracy, proverbially, but to literally break laws on brazen display for the entire state elected officials of Georgia to be witness to. I mean, the fact that he would find it not only just okay to do that, but to find it, frankly, politically shrewd to do so at this late stage in his term of office really does tell you how out of touch he is, not only with the facts on the ground, but also how clearly he is interested in peddling misinformation. And for all of your listeners, we need to be very vigilant about the misinformation that really the Trump administration has fostered for the last several years. While Trump is on his way out, Trumpism will remain, and the misinformation is a core feature of that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at our political roundtable tonight. We're talking about that phone call heard across America, President Trump debating with Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, on Saturday, as it has been reported, trying to overturn the election results in Georgia that had been counted, audited, recounted, and in each case, the result was the same. Joe Biden won the state of Georgia. It was close, but it was not in dispute, according to state officials there. What do you think of this call coming at the beginning of a really political week here in America? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to Mike. Mike calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Mike. What do you think?
Hey, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just want to say that this is no surprise. Trump is a fear-monger. He wants to incite fear in everything that he does. Look at his show that he had. So he wants to scare everybody to death, and it doesn't surprise me. I listen to Steve Harvey. We should not be surprised by anything this crazy guy does. He just needs to be gone, be done, and just be done.
Mike, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Zero. One of the things, Mary, that I found really fascinating today, and that was when we heard from Gabriel Sterling. He spent more than 30 minutes pushing back on conspiracy theories and calling out the president directly about the phone call and some of the other things that have been cropping up, and he went down line by line, and this is just part of what he said today about the videotaped recount and his thoughts about what the president and his campaign and even some of his staff have said.
And this is what's really frustrating. The president's legal team had the entire tape. They watched the entire tape and then, and from our point of view, intentionally misled the state Senate, voters, and the people of the United States about this. It was intentional, it was obvious, and anybody watching this knows that. Anyone watching it knows that. That's why we released the entire tape for people to watch.
Mary, your reaction to that?
Well, it's so interesting to see because all of these, remember, are Republican officials. Raffensperger, Sterling, and as he said, you know, they know this tape, and they have counted those votes so much. As Dr. Perry has said, they know this is disinformation because they did the hand count, remember, in Georgia, and they looked at every single signature, every single vote. And I think what's rattling so many of these Republicans is that, you know, they have the tape, as he said. They know that this is disinformation, and they're getting threats, these Republicans, even after they supported Trump and they voted for Trump. And let's face it, in many of the cases, they backed so many of these voting restrictions that they don't say there's voting fraud, but they have backed many of these restrictions. And still, because they won't go along with the party line, they are getting personally attacked. So in some sense, it's great they're standing up, but they have been enablers up to this point. But he is just going that extra step. And you know, now they and their families are under threat and all of these things. And as Dr. Perry, I agree totally that Trumpism isn't over because we do have a president and his supporters who are enabling all of this disinformation. That's one reason why when they went to court, they did not say that there was fraud, because in court you can't say something that you don't have evidence of.
Well,
they can come out and give all the press conferences they want, but they know that there's no there, but they're doing it anyway for power, for purpose, and they're splitting up America and really just roiling, you know, on the way out, he is just leaving wreckage in his wake. I mean, Putin could not have, you know, in 2016, they say he interfered. He didn't really have to in 2020.
That's an interesting point. But Dr. Perry, what does this recording do to the Republican Party that perhaps had not been done before Saturday? I mean, is this just the icing on a really bizarre political cake that America has had to eat over the past 4 years?
You know, sadly, what it appears is that the Republican Party has no interest in disassociating itself from Donald Trump. And as many articles and polls have indicated in the last several weeks since the November election, in fact, Donald Trump is the Republican front runner for the 2024 nomination. And so what that suggests is that while Biden and Harris will be leading the executive branch for the next 4 years, they will be doing so under the cover of Trump darkness, so to speak, as he will be doing all that he can to disrupt and dismantle the change that they are seeking to, of course, get implemented, along with, of course, their partners in Congress. And the sad story here is that as we see, as we've got a dozen GOP senators who are willing to go on the record tomorrow saying that they, in fact, contest the certification of the election. Mind you, senators from states that have certified elections, where GOP governors have certified the elections, where GOP secretaries of state have certified the elections. But because of their interest solely in maintaining their good graces with Donald Trump, they are willing, a dozen U.S. senators, GOP members, are willing to go on Front Street tomorrow at the Congress and to, in fact, make the kinds of discredited claims about disinformation that Mary was reminding us all of from the Senate floor. That tells us everything we need to know about how the Republican Party is deciding to deal with Trump in a post 2016 to 2020, of course, Trump presidency era. and that is that they have chosen to hang their hat on Donald Trump and not to move away from the Trumpism kinds of politics. We might recall, right, the GOP, the last time they did kind of an awakening was allegedly after the 2008 election when they wanted to, you know, reach out to black voters. They were, you know, setting up these little urban commissions and things to try to reach out to minorities. That lasted all but a couple of weeks. And we saw how quickly they shifted back into being in lockstep with their traditionalisms. And this is a clear example of that, of course, far more extreme and far more dangerous this time around because of the implications that furthering Trumpism will have for the entire country and the world, and particularly for marginalized people, if, in fact, these types of statements and illegalities, frankly, and misinformation is allowed to continue and fester to the point that it really does embed the Republican Party. You know, the conservative politics, you know, many African-Americans support various versions of conservatism. The issue that the Republican Party is going to have is finding a way, with Trump or without Trump, to really speak to the demographic change that we see in places like Georgia, that we see in places like Florida, that we see in places like Texas, because those are the states that they're going to have to make inroads in. And this time around, they did not do well in Georgia. They did not do well in Arizona. They did not do well in Colorado and these other states where demographic change has suggested that should they move away from the, frankly, the white kind of male worker strategy of their party and move toward a more inclusive vision, that they would, in fact, have more sustainability. But it seems as though the party is interested and kind of who they can quote as having done things for them lately.
Yeah,
and lately,
yeah.
That guy is Donald Trump.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Charlene in Southeast D.C. We're also going to talk to Gloria calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. So please do not hang up. We will be taking your phone calls. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. By the way, if you download the Quiet Storm app to your smartphone, you can hear all of the Daily Drum from 7 to 8 p.m. in addition to some great music, that WHUR Quiet Storm sound. By the way, John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Political Roundtable. We are examining President Trump's call to Georgia over the weekend and some of the other issues for a critical political week in America. That includes a Georgia U.S. Senate runoff election that will determine political power in the U.S. Senate, as well as the certification of the Electoral College this week. My guests are Dr. Ravi Perry, chair of the Political Science Department at Howard University, and Mary Curtis, reporter with The Roll Call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Gloria, thanks for hanging on, calling from Woodbridge. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I don't know why everyone is so shocked at what we've heard. This whole world is changing. It's always been like that. It's just that we, as the public, are now being informed, are having an opportunity to actually hear it. But these kinds of things has been happening for many, many, many years. I don't even believe anymore that anything is done legally or fairly, or I don't. I think that it's so bad, especially in America. I don't doubt anything that would happen because the world is just that bad.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not shocked. In fact, it's probably pretty much what has been going on for years among each other. We just were not privileged to have been able to hear it.
Interesting point, Gloria. Thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Charlene calling from Southeast D.C. Charlene, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I just wanted to say that many black Americans and you know, Caucasians believe the election between him and Hillary, that he cheated. That's why he's pressing the issue so bad right now, because he probably couldn't get his little spies and undercover hands. Who you know pardons almost 90 people in an election? Who does that? People that was involved in him and misconstrued, whatever, you know, blase, blase. Mm. The Constitution must be upheld.
I can agree with that last point, but you got to watch out for the blase, blase.
Charlene. Yeah, but, you know, he's bad, man. He's bad. You better not sleep. Don't sleep him.
Yeah, don't
sleep. He got away with a pardon. What president do you know that the tax statements weren't presented before you even become president? Who does that?
Yeah, but that's not a law either. The whole tax thing was something that actually something that Richard Nixon actually did. But there is no law that says that you must submit your tax forms. It was a common practice, but not a law. Wonder whether or not there's a chance that that could change in future years. Charlene, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to talk a little bit about the Electoral College certification. Mary, Tom Cotton, a U.S. Senator from Kansas, said that he will not object to it. Tom Cotton, an ardent supporter of President Trump, as you know, does that coming out today suggest a bit of a shift in thinking, even from supporters of President Trump? And of course, we still have Ted Cruz out of Texas, who was leading the charge to object to the Electoral College certification.
Well, first I want to say, we have the answers to many of these, not only in my column at CQ Roll Call, but my podcast, Equal Time with Mary C. Curtis. See how I got that in there?
And that's fine.
I think that so many of these people, it's not about Trump, it's about their own political futures. And who wants to be the heir in 2024? And a lot of these people are saying, people may be sick of Trump, but who I want to run for president. I think Cruz is among them, and I think Tom Cotton is. And Josh Hawley of Missouri, who's leading this effort among the senators who are going to object. And Tom Cotton, who's a smart guy, a senator from Arkansas, is looking and saying...
Oh, you said thank you, Arkansas. I said Kansas. Thank you so much for correct.
I didn't even realize that he is saying, I don't want to disrupt the system in this way. And make Mitch McConnell mad, too, because let's face it, these senators who are going off on their own are really kind of breaking with him as well. He's pretty powerful. So Tom Cotton is trying to walk that tightrope and saying, we should look into these allegations, but this is the Electoral College, this is the system. And remember, the Electoral College does favor Republicans because, you know, so many Republicans that have been elected have not gotten the popular vote, including Trump in 2016. But the Electoral College does favor them. So he wants to maintain the integrity of it to say that he is going to be the new leader. So I think you will see a lot of these Republicans, they don't want to break with Trump in the sense that they know he has, well, look, he got over 70 million votes from people who saw all the things that he did, the COVID response and all of that, and said, oh, yeah, sign me up for 4 more years of that. So he has a strong base. But he also wants to put a little bit of distance between him and establish himself as the leader in 2024. You're going to see a lot of that jockeying now. So he's going to be separating himself, but still trying to maintain that. You have folks like Mitt Romney, though, in Utah. He can be separate from Trump because he has his own base there. So right now it's all about jockeying for position and who is going to be leading this party. Although I agree with Dr. Perry, it is the party of Trump for now. But how long is he going to keep a hold of all these voters? So you'll see some folks, you know, tripping away from him. You saw that they overrode for the first time his veto of the defense funds, the Authorization Act, and that was a pretty bold move. So, you'll see some moving away from him, of Trump. And I don't think this phone call did him much good beyond his stalwart supporters, because it was so desperate a move.
So,
I think some independents are looking at that. And some of these people in the suburbs who broke from him in Georgia and other places, and it was baldly what it is. Although, as your caller, Gloria, said, this isn't anything new.
So I want to drill down a little bit, because we've done a little bit of talking about 2024, but we have a midterm in 2022. And the Democrats have lost some of their numbers in Congress during this year. What are your thoughts about what we may see in the congressional elections in 2022, considering what we are seeing right now? Does that mean that Biden-Harris need to really make some strides, or do they really have nothing whatsoever to do with what happens in 2022, just as Obama said during his first midterm election? He said, we got a pasting. Is that something that could very well happen?
Well, it really could, in the sense that usually the party that's in power in the White House loses seats, and they don't have many to lose in 2022. And that's why these Georgia races are so critical, because if the Republicans maintain control of the Senate, you can see Mitch McConnell trying to slow walk everything and not getting much done. So then in 2022, they can say, look, the Democrats didn't really do anything. You have to get Republicans in here. So it's going to be hard for them. And of course, in these state legislatures, Republicans did maintain control in many of them, which means they have the power to gerrymander these districts, and so that Republicans can maintain power. So they're really going to have to they would love to win these Senate races so that they would have a tight but clear control, the Democrats in the Senate, so they could actually get going on things like the stimulus, like COVID, the vaccine distribution, and so many other things that they're going to have to reverse that Trump put into place. So it's going to be very tough for them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's why these Georgia races are incredibly, incredibly critical.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Esther, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Esther. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for listening.
Sure. Esther, go right ahead. Esther, are you there? Esther, give me a call back if you can. So, Dr. Perry, can you talk to me a little bit? Can you give me an Electoral College 101 as to what we could see on Wednesday? We have this, these handful of Republicans who say they are not going to vote to certify, even though the votes have been certified in their state. What's going to happen? We don't talk about this much, if at all. This is a footnote in news reporting for years. It's something that a lot of people just did not know about until the brouhaha and the dust up about this.
Yeah, so I'm a professor at Howard University. I'm teaching a class on national government this semester. So anyone, of course, is welcome to sign up for that.
I think I may have to sign up. just don't give me any term papers, but go right ahead.
I really appreciate the question, because the education of politics is so important for all of us, and most people will never set foot in a college classroom. And so the quick 101 politics here is that the Constitution says that the Electoral College is to, in fact, certify the first step of certification of the will of the voters in the November election, and that the framers intended, in part, if you want to look at it favorably, that they did not trust the public. They did not. It was a very elite system, a very classist system, obviously racist, sexist, all those other things as well. But they were really disinterested in trusting the public. Remember, for 100 plus years, you know, U.S. senators were elected by state legislators, not by the public. Another example of how the framers of the Constitution did not trust the public to make wise decisions. In its best form, the Electoral College ideally should work in a way where not party operatives chosen by party elites who cast symbolic votes that have no significance, as it's been the last several years, but ideally the way the Electoral College could work is that, say, for example, in 2016, where many people thought that the Trump winning the election was, while it may have been fair, was in fact bad for the country and for the world. We could have seen, right, that the Electoral College said, well, hey, we know what the will of the voters is, but we want to go in a different direction. And that ultimately, as you're saying, the final certification of the November election results and the presidential election comes with Congress certifying the election themselves. And so in between that, of course, you have all the states, the Secretary of State, all the governors, all of them have done their various challenges and all their recounts, and all that stuff has come out, of course, in favor of Democrats and Biden-Harris team. And so the reason why the Electoral College matters is because it does create a clear preference for what we would traditionally have historically have called kind of slave states, for smaller states as well. And that tends to have more positive outcomes for conservative politics and for white supremacist politics. But it's important to emphasize, not always. And I think that it's important that voters know that whatever happens tomorrow, politics is a long game. If you are interested, for example, in the Democrats being able to have the power to do some significant legislation, then you should be watching what happens in Georgia tomorrow. Even if we see that the Democrats, in fact, do win those two seats in Georgia tomorrow, what that will mean is that, well, Vice President Harris will certainly be living in D.C. and close to the Capitol, because she'll be having to cast a lot of probably tie votes in the U.S. Senate. But also what it means is that this is the very beginning. We, as you were saying earlier and from a previous question, it's very important that we remember that this participation in politics must continue year-round. Even if Democrats do win tomorrow, and the Senate changes hands, and Mitch McConnell is no longer the majority leader, Democrats will need the same kind of voter engagement, same types of voter participation that we've seen in Georgia, led by Fair Count, Stacey Abrams, and by the way, dozens of other people that Stacey Abrams herself has also recognized, who have been doing this work for over a decade in Georgia. That work will need to continue all year long up through 2022, because if Congress does not have the kind of the power associated with it that aligns with the executive branch, then there's frankly very little that the executive branch can get done. And so my last point about this is that a lot of the issues or concerns that a lot of black folks and other minorities have about the Obama administration is really less about Barack Obama and more about how Mitch McConnell made it impossible for Barack Obama to get much of any Democratic policies done for 6 of his 8 years. And so it's important for voters to know that politics, the news is every day 24/7. Politics is similar and it's something that we need to be engaging in all the time, everywhere. So I hope people are registered to vote. We're going to keep talking about it even though it's not an election, because if we don't do that, then we're going to keep having these situations where we see a win here, a loss there, a win here, a loss there. And that pendulum swing, for most Americans, it really is what creates disillusionment in politics, and then they tune out, and then they don't engage, and then we're back to square one all over again.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Debbie calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Debbie. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I graduated from the National Holistic Institute. Just a little background. This is in Berkeley. And I also graduated from the Holistic Institute of Health, which is international, worldwide. And it's fostered by, the top person in it is Joel Wallach, who is Nobel Prize winner, and, I mean, he's phenomenal. So all I'm saying is I've learned that I did hear whenever Donald Trump was getting treatment for COVID, I heard on one doctor said something about statin drugs. Now, statin drugs, I know for a fact, okay, they were given to people years ago. Our grandparents never had memory loss, Alzheimer's, dementia, or anything like that. And the reason being, they never took statin drugs. It was created to block cholesterol. The Eskimos have 250 to 300.
So, Debbie, let me stop you because I only have a few minutes. What's your point?
Okay. Well, my point then, okay, Donald Trump is taking statin. I heard someone mention
okay,
statin.
So here's my question. Who cares? Why is that important?
It's important because I believe he's got dementia, is what I'm seeing. To me, I mean, I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm just a holistic coach and a holistic educator. But that's what statin drugs do to you. And if he's been taking it for years now, it's a possibility that his cholesterol is being blocked. And that's where what happens whenever your cholesterol, because your brain's made up of 70% cholesterol.
Well, this is not so much about, this is not a conversation about the health of the president, although this could very well be a conversation about the mindset of the president. And since we do not have a physician on this program, it's really hard for us to address the specifics of what you are raising. With that said, there have been discussions long before this week about the president's state of mind and all of these other things in 2016 and even before that. And so I think it would be a disservice for us, even to President Trump, to say that he has dementia, because we do not know that, and we do not know whether or not he's taking statins. And as you know, health information on the president has been difficult to come by at best, whether it's from his doctors or from him himself. So I don't think we should go down this road. However, you never know. We may find out after 16 days from now about the president's health in the coming weeks, months, and years. You just don't know. But anyway, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. One of the things that I did want to really take a more serious look at, Mary, when we talk about, and you spoke about it just a little bit earlier, when you talk about the positioning of some of these senators and what this may do to the Republican Party. Yes, you suggested it's not about the party, it's about them and jockeying for position. But I think that the reality is that there are a great many, there are people of color who consider themselves Republicans, they consider themselves conservatives, and there is a great deal of concern about what this week and the past several years is doing to the Republican Party. Mary, so what happened to the party of fiscal conservatives and straight up and fly right conservative thinking? Is that ever going to possibly come back?
I really don't know if you're going to have some Republicans like the Susan Collinses and the Mitt Romney split off, because you're right, they have subverted everything that they supposedly believed in. These big tax cuts, so deficits don't matter. The fact that states should have rights, but now they want to overturn the results of all these state elections. So many things they have. And I want to say, I'm an African-American, grew up in Maryland, and my parents were Republicans.
Mm.
When you had many black Republicans, sort of the party of Lincoln Republicans, who were very conservative people in many ways, but they, and my mother actually was very active in the party, but were very disillusioned when the Southern Strategy came in and folks saw that they could get a lot of the white Southern votes who had been Democrats after Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and these acts, and the Democratic Party align themselves, and they made that deal, and now it's coming home to roost with demographic change. And it's true that you did have a slightly more, a larger number of blacks and Hispanics vote for Trump this election than the last one, but make no mistake, the majority did not. And they are aligning themselves with this. So I think you're right. The Republican Party will have to have a reckoning. And what are you for as opposed to what are you against? And who are you against?
So let me ask you this. Are your parents still living?
No.
Gosh, I'm sorry.
But my mother did become disillusioned actually in 80 when Ronald Reagan started his campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi, starting talking about states' rights and welfare queens and black bucks buying steaks and such like that. And it became very clear that they were going down a path, you know, to take advantage of that. And you're right. And there have been some Republicans like the Jack Kemps who have talked in a more inclusive way. And as Dr. Perry said, that there was, you know, after the 2012 election, they were going to have an autopsy and appeal more to a more diverse group. But Donald Trump basically squeezed the last bit of white resentment out, really drove those numbers up and won. And now what will be left? You see so many of these groups of never-Trumpers and saying that they are no longer Republicans and... But it is mainly the party of Trump. So it will be interesting to see what their next play is. You'll have the people like Nikki Haley and Tom Cotton, and these people jockeying for position. And then you might have others saying, we can't go down this road. And I would be interested because this is they've gotten really far afield from the party of Lincoln, I will say.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, Dr. Perry, some people would argue, and I think some of our callers have said so tonight, why are we surprised at not Donald Trump, but why are we surprised that he received, 71 million votes, people who actually support him? Because you may have some people, Dr. Perry, who could say, well, we told you this is what the Republican Party was like with the Tea Party and those who may have. And this is the party. I'm talking specifically about the modern Republican Party, and that Donald Trump did not create what we're seeing now with the Proud Boys. He just made it. He normalized it. What do you think about that, Dr. Perry?
Oh, well, certainly. I mean, racism existed before Donald Trump, and it will exist long after. He certainly, though, fanned the flames of racism and, as Mary said, white racial resentment in particular by appealing to people who have felt lost and left out. It's a wonderful populism message that's very effective on either side of the aisle, where you speak to the people who feel as though government has not spoken to them. And Donald Trump used the illusion of his billionaire status and the privilege of his white male status to his significant advantage, not only for him and obviously his family as well, who has profited from this administration, as we've seen in reports. And so racism is alive and well. Donald Trump did not start it, nor will he end it. I wouldn't even say he's a symptom of it. Let's be clear. Donald Trump got elected because he ran for office and people voted for him. That's, I mean, to be very basic about how this works again. And I think we should just be honest about the fact that there's always really been a third of the country that's been relatively sketchy, racist, homophobic, sexist, all those kinds of things. They also tend to often not be very active in politics. Donald Trump, you know, awakened many of those voices. And that, in many ways, was the shift for the Republican Party, and that while you saw, particularly from the Clinton years through the Bush years, both parties kind of trending conservative, really with the Obama years, the Democratic Party began to move to, in a progressive direction and went full speed ahead in the Hillary Clinton campaign. Despite the misinformation that was alive and well that convinced thousands of black people that she was not the best choice at the time. And what we find now, as we're beginning a new presidential administration, is that the racisms that have come and go in various presidencies and throughout the last 5-10 years is alive and well today. And while you may have a Donald Trump who is able to use the power along with Mitch McConnell to usher in, by the way, a very racialized jurisprudence as it relates to the judicial system, where literally all of their federal nominees have been white, is quite a concerning for people that claim to care about right criminal justice, which is a major issue in black communities. And while, you know, he can point to, you know, one bill that made some measure of impact in marginalized communities, the record speaks for itself not only is the rhetoric racist and sexist and homophobic and transphobic and xenophobic. Keep in mind, we still have thousands of people sitting at our southern border right now only because they're brown and don't speak English primarily. That, you know, the reality is, though, that we have to remember that no one presidency, no one politician really is going to begin or end these types of longstanding isms that have been part of the American story from its inception.
Yeah,
the only people who can solve that is us.
Mary, real quick, you've got 20 seconds. Are we going to find out who won the Senate race in Georgia tomorrow, or is that going to be a long, drawn-out process? First question. Second question, do you believe that the Electoral College certification is going to be ultra-messy?
First question, I think maybe, I don't think we'll find out Tuesday night, but maybe by the end of the week.
Okay.
And the second question, the debate will go on and on in the middle of the night and probably the next day on the Electoral College. It will end up with Joe Biden being certified. And just want to say I totally agree with Dr. Perry with his solution to get involved, because so many people say, I'm not interested in politics, but let me tell you, politics is interested in you.
Wow. Wow, I'm going to tweet that one. Thank you so much.
It's from a book I'm in.
Okay. Dr. Ravi Perry.
I'll talk about it on my podcast, too. Equal time.
Equal time. Mary Curtis, Dr. Ravi Perry, thank you both so very much. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, January 4th, 2021. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.